I'd like to go ahead and call the Senate Finance Committee to order. It's 9 a.m. by the old clock on the wall. I think the real time is a couple minutes after that, but it's March 26th, 2007. With us today is Senator Hoffman, Senator Olson, Senator Huggins, Senator Dyson, Senator Thomas, and Senator Elton, and myself, Senator Stedman. We're going to hear three bills today. We're going to start off on the agenda with House Bill 35, extending the Board of Midwives, and then we're going to move on to Senate Bill 89, electronic monitoring of gang probationers, and then we'll conclude with Senate Bill 105, which is a reimbursement of municipal debt, which we've been working on over the years. But first, we're going to deal with a bill that has come over from the House, House Bill 35, extending the Board of Midwives. On March 13th of this year, the committee passed out, without objection, Senate Bill 81, the Senate companion sponsored by Senator Davis. I'd like to go ahead and ask Representative Kawasaki to come forward to make some comments on the bill. And then, unless there are some objections, I'd like to go ahead and move this bill on to catch up to Senate Bill 81 in the Rules Committee. I would like to welcome Representative Kawasaki to the Senate Finance. This is her first visit to the warmest and friendliest committee room in the Senate, if I could be so bold as to say, even the House. If you could go ahead and introduce your bill and give us some highlights, and then we'll go on from there.
Okay. Thank you, Senator, and members of the committee. Thank you for allowing me the opportunity to introduce House Bill 35. House Bill 35, as you pointed out, is the House companion to Senate Bill 81, which passed out of the committee unanimously several weeks ago. House Bill 35 would extend the sunset date for the Board of Certified and Direct Entry Midwives to the year 2015. It's an eight-year extension on the recommendations of the Legislative Budget and Audit. The Board of Direct Entry Midwives deals with issues with midwifery in the state. There's 36 midwives currently governed under this board. It's a cost-neutral board, and we believe that it is beneficial to the public and the legislature to pass this so that midwives and the profession can have an outlet within the state. Today with me, I've got Dana Brown, who is a certified direct entry midwife and one of the original members of the board from Juneau, and Pat Davidson, who's from Legislative Budget and Audit, to make any comments on the bill or on the program itself. So if it pleases the chairman, we could have the two of them come up. There also might be someone from the commissioner's office that called in as well.
We could go through and have a whole hearing on the bill, or if you have the votes, you can talk less and take action. It's kind of up to you.
This is the chairman.
I would recommend that maybe we take a quick peek at the fiscal note. There seems to be a difference there, and talk about that just for a minute. On the Senate version of the fiscal note, there was an incorrect entry. The current fiscal note in front of you on the House bill concerning the impact in 07 is correctly noted. It has no fiscal impact cleaning up the technical issue with the Senate version. So we'll move along the House fiscal note with this, which then will clean up the drafting issue. Other than that, everything seems to be pretty much in order. Do we have a motion?
Mr. Chairman, I move that we pass out House Bill 35 with accompanying fiscal note with individual recommendations.
Do we have objection? Hearing no, yes. Do you have objections, Senator Huggins?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I do, and it's, I'm trying to figure out how to pronounce the sponsor's full name. He has a four-part name. If he would clarify that before we go final.
For the record, Senator Huggins, through the chair, it's Scott Juwo Kawasaki.
Juwo.
Just like the motorcycle.
Okay, I remove my objections. I just...
Mr. Chairman, I do object.
Okay.
And the reason for my objection, I'd just like to hear from the midwife that's in the gallery, if we could, just if you could make a short statement as to what her impression of the board is, and general outlines, if I could.
I'll give you that leeway.
You say you do have a midwife here?
Yeah.
Okay.
My name is Kay Connie. I'm a midwife here in Juneau, Alaska. I worked really hard to create this board in 1992 and sat on the board for the first 8 years, helped draft the first regulations and put everything in place. I'm also the executive director of the Juneau Family Birth Center here in Juneau, and I represent the Midwives Association of Alaska.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Olson.
There is a the issue of what a direct entry midwife. What's the difference between that and a regular midwife?
Well, there's two kinds of midwives in this country, which is unique in the world. Most countries just have one kind of midwife. But in this country, in the 60s and early 70s, developed the certified nurse midwife and the certified direct entry midwife, or in some states were called licensed midwives. This came about because certified nurse midwives worked only in the hospital under the supervision of a physician, and there was that need for women to be attended in their home. These days, the professions are tending to meld. Certified direct entry midwifery has become much more professional and is licensed in almost every state. Certified nurse midwives are now working in birth centers and home birth, and we're becoming closer and closer. One thing that I will say is the certified direct entry midwife, because we were not part of the medical profession to begin with, our training is much more extensive. Our clinical training is much more extensive. The requirements are much more extensive than a certified nurse midwife or even a physician. We have to attend 60 births minimum to get our license, and most certified nurse midwives apprentice for at least 3 years and attend up close to 100 births before they can get their license.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I remove my objection.
Yeah. Objection's been removed. Any further objection? Hearing no further objection, we'll go ahead and move HB 35 on with the attached physical note onto rules, where we'll made up the House fiscal note with the Senate fiscal note for that clerical issue. Thank you for coming today.
Thank you.
Good job, Scott.
We'll go on to bill number two for today. This will be the first time this bill is being heard at the table. Senate Bill 89 is electronic monitoring of gangs members on prohibition, or probation, I should say. Should probably be on prohibition, too. Anyway, with that, we have Senator Wilkowski. I think it's his first time at Senate Finance. That's not correct. Your first bill up, Senator, and I have absolute faith that you'll give us a thorough scrubbing and presentation of your bill today.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And my name is Bill Wilkowski. I'm the Senator for Northeast Anchorage, and let me just say what a pleasure it is to be before the warmest and friendliest committee in the Senate, not the legislature. Senate Bill 89 is a bill that will require ankle monitoring devices to be put on gang members who are on parole or probation. As those of you in Anchorage and outlying areas in Anchorage know, there has been an increase in gang activity in Anchorage, and there is concern that it will spread to outside of Anchorage. In 2006, there were 122 gang-related cases that were reported. In 2007, there have been 20 gang-related crimes so far that we know of. People in my district and people all over Anchorage have been asking the legislature to do something, and This bill stems from a similar type of legislation that was enacted in San Bernardino, California, to deal with the burgeoning gang problem there. What they did was they required that gang members who are on parole or probation wear ankle monitoring devices, electronic monitoring devices, ankle bracelets, if you will. It's an innovative approach, but it has proven to be very successful in San Bernardino. Essentially, what it does is it tracks the movements of gang members. It has a global positioning system, and you can do this in a number of different ways. You can set it so that when gang members, when parolees or probationers go into certain zones, for instance, it will trigger alarms that go off within a computer monitoring system that someone is watching. You can, and one of the key goals, one of the key concepts behind this is a couple things. Number one, you want to prohibit gang members from getting back together with their other gang members once they get released. And this has proven to be very effective. Another thing that you can do is if you don't want gang members going to certain areas, if you don't want them going to schools, for instance, you can program certain areas into the global positioning system so that when they do get to a high school, for instance, it will set off an alarm. And at that point, the probation officer will contact the gang member or, if necessary, send out a police officer to the area. Now, some of the cost, by the way, this is a top priority for the Anchorage Police Department, the Municipality of Anchorage, as well as the Anchorage School District, and there are letters of support from the police department and from the Fairbanks Chief of Police because they recognize that it's better to nip this problem in the bud rather than to see it spread into outlying areas. I think probably 20 years ago, not many people would have expected to see gangs in Alaska, but we have them. And so we're trying to really nip this in the bud before it explodes and gets more out of control. As far as the fiscal note, there is an indeterminate fiscal note. The costs of this program are driven by two different things. Number one, the cost of the ankle monitoring devices, which range from anywhere from $8 to $17 per day. The cost to be paid by the parolee or probationer. Second cost is the cost of monitoring that person. And there is a continuum of how much we want to spend to do that. We changed one thing in the bill. We initially had continuous monitoring. And the concern with that was that might be interpreted too broadly. You can have monitoring so that you have one person sitting in front of a computer screen 24 hours a day watching 15 or 20 gang members who are on parole or probation. And then the moment they see them going into a zone or going into an area where they're not supposed to be, you would send out a call, you would send out a police officer or a probation officer. We felt that was a little bit too expensive to do. Since this is the first time we're doing this, we decided that it would be a little bit more computer operated so that we don't have someone sitting in front of a computer screen all day, but rather their technology has increased so that you can have, and I've actually seen this because I have some constituents who do this. They have Blackberries, and they'll have 20 different people who are on, you could have 20 different people who are on probation or parole. Actually, you could have 40 or even 100 people for that matter. And then an alarm will go off on your Blackberry when someone does something that or goes into an area that they're not supposed to be. Once you see that alarm, then you get on the phone, you call up the person, hey, what are you doing, what's going on? Or if it's something real severe, then you could send out a police officer or you could go and inspect yourself, send out a probation officer. We've chosen to take a little bit more of a passive approach to this so that we can keep the costs down because I know the costs are certainly important to that. And if you look at the fiscal note, it was an indeterminate fiscal note. However, they did make some estimates where they the costs ranged from about $157,000 to about $195,000. And there is someone from Corrections here who can talk a little bit more about how they calculated those numbers. But with that, Mr. Chair, I'll stop, and I'm happy to answer any questions that any members have. Thank you.
Maybe we'll go ahead and bring up the representation from the department. Charlene Griffin, I think, is here. Does any members have any questions for Senator Wilkowski? Senator Olson and Senator Dyson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The $157,000, $195,000 is per year?
I believe so, yes.
So these bracelets are on for more than a year?
Well, that depends. And corrections can probably talk a little bit more about that, but it would be the length of time that someone is on probation or parole. So someone could be on probation for more than a year, yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Dyson.
Yeah. Thank you. I've spent a lot of time working with the and visiting with folks that work on these issues in our area, and I understand that our gang activity so far has not fit into the classic patterns of gangs fighting over turf or the control of a particular criminal activity, you know, distribution of drugs, smash and grab, or prostitution, and so on and so forth. It would seem to me that these ankle bracelets kinds of things would be useful in controlling some other kinds of crime. I think particularly of sexual assault and domestic violence. Was there a particular reason why you chose to make this only apply to gang-related stuff?
Through the chair, Senator Dyson, I would agree with you. I think, and actually, these type of devices have been used very effectively with sex offenders, and particularly sex offenders of little children. You can set the devices so that they prohibit people from going into school zones. The reason that we did this was strictly for a fiscal, to keep the fiscal note down. I would certainly not object if the committee decided to extend it, but just understand there's going to be a significant cost involved in doing so. But I would not object to that, and it is something that I have given thought to. It is something that we may want to do in the future. It's just a cost of expenses. And we thought this would be something that we can try, and we can see how it works. And if it does work, then next year, maybe the following year, we can come back and extend it to more. But I would certainly be open if the committee decided to expand it. I would have no objection.
Go ahead, Senator Dyson.
Yeah. My visiting with the folks that are working this tells me that the gang-related stuff is not too geographic centered, and the shootings we've had have been spread away from the area where you and I know most of those folks tend to live. So, you know, it has a limited effect. But indeed, you probably know better than I do how ineffective restraining orders have been on domestic violence. And basically, the law enforcement gets involved after the restraining order has been violated and or the damage has been done, and they have all very, very little demonstrated effectiveness in keeping the abusers from going where they shouldn't go. So I have no complaints with what you're trying to do, and I think it could make some difference in gang stuff in the future. Seems to me it would have marginal effect on the gang activity, criminal gang activity now, and could be hugely helpful, particularly in DV cases. And the other ones where somebody has been terrorized by sexual assault and has no clear way without this of knowing where their perpetrator is in relationship to them.
Thank you. Through the chair, just briefly, I don't disagree that it would be very effective on sex offenders and domestic violence cases. This, as I mentioned, was a top priority of the Anchorage Police Department to have it apply to gang members, because I certainly know in my district that is a concern that I heard quite a bit of, and I still hear quite a bit of from my constituents, that the increase in gang crime. As I said, if this is something that we can nip in the bud now, and I do think that if you have gang members on ankle bracelets, it will be a strong deterrent, and that is something that's supported, as I mentioned, by the Anchorage School District the municipality of Anchorage, Fairbanks Chief of Police, and the Anchorage Chief of Police, that we will have an impact in stopping this problem before it gets even bigger than it is.
Senator Thomas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Did you find in your research that there was some ability for actually the gang member to get himself out of associating with the gang, which was a positive thing for him, by letting them know that he was on a monitoring device and therefore this would cause some difficulty with their activity continuing in some areas, and it sounds a little odd, but it was a way for them to get out of the situation in a graceful manner, almost, is what it amounts to.
Through the chair, Senator Thomas, you're absolutely correct. There are strong indicators that when gang members get out of jail, there is a tremendous, tremendous peer pressure to get back into the gang. And what they found is that the gang members are not so willing to have someone back with them who's being constantly monitored by an electronic monitoring device. So it does actually help the gang member who is trying to get out of the gang, who's trying to get back into society, and say, hey, I can go and hang out with you, but just, you got to understand, all our movements are going to be tracked in that instance.
And just one other thing, did you look at a fiscal note as far as the idea, as Senator Dyson brings up, with the sexual predators and or other particular?
No.
Okay.
Through the chair, we did not.
Thank you.
Okay, we'll go ahead and have Ms. Griffin tackle that moving fiscal note, if you could.
For the record, Charlene Griffin, Admin Services Director for the Department of Corrections. The fiscal note is an indeterminate note. We tried to provide backup on the three different types of monitoring that this bill could bring about. Active GPS is the 24/7 monitoring, where you have someone sitting in front of a screen tracking the probationer and everywhere they go. That's a very expensive monitoring. We did speak with San Bernardino, and the ratio of probation officers to offenders in that case is in the vicinity of 1 to 15. So it's very expensive, and my understanding is that's probably why continuous was removed from the bill. Passive GPS with intensive supervision is a little better. We can go 20 offenders per one probation officer, but it's not monitoring in real time. There's a download every 24 hours that tells you where the offender has been. It can also have the inclusion and exclusion zones program, so you can know in real time if they've entered an area that is an exclusion zone. Passive GPS without intensive supervision, we need about one probation officer per every 40 offenders. So there's basically three tiers that could be used for this program. The problem is we don't have a good method to determine how many offenders this would apply to. And that's why there's an indeterminate note.
Okay, thank you. Senator Elton.
Thanks, and thanks, Charlene, for the testimony. Are there a limited number of bracelets available?
Through the chair, not to my knowledge. To my knowledge, we can contract with companies that would make the number of bracelets that we need available, but I can follow up on that.
If you could, that would be helpful. Mr. Chair, Charlene, in what communities are the bracelets available?
Through the chair, currently we are running EM programs in Anchorage, Fairbanks, Ketchikan, and we just started in Kenai. I'm not aware, and I could follow up and see if there are areas of the state that this technology would not be viable for.
Okay, and one final question. Charlene, through the fiscal note, you talk about the different numbers of people that may be eligible for this. What, but I would assume that that is somewhat related to how you define gang-related indicators. I mean, what kind of a process does the department go through to identify people who may or may not qualify or may or may not be required to have a bracelet?
Through the chair, currently we don't have any probationers on bracelets. We use electronic monitoring as a form of incarceration. So what we're not sure about is how many cases the court would determine that the offender, when they are on probation or parole, should be wearing bracelets.
If I can follow up. Charlene, I guess, so are you saying the court applies the gang-related indicators or the department does?
Through the chair, for this bill, I believe it would be the court. I believe Annie Carpinetti from the Department of Law is here if you have more questions on this, and she could probably answer them better than I can.
I see the sponsor edging toward the microphone.
Yes, through the chair. Senator Elton, there is a provision in here that it must be an aggravating factor. It must be proven in court that it was an aggravating factor. Of course, if you had a case strictly before a judge, and it was proven that the member, the defendant, was a member of a criminal street gang, and the offense was committed for the benefit at the direction of or in association with a criminal street gang, then that would be the aggravating factor which would trigger the application of the electronic monitoring device.
Thanks, Mr. Chair.
Let's go ahead and move on to the public testimony section. We have the Mr. Chuck Koop from Kenai Police Department. If you're still online, can you please identify yourself?
Yes, sir. My name is Chuck Kopp, Chief of Police, Kenai Police Department, and I'm also on the Law Enforcement Subcommittee of the Violent Crime Task Force in Anchorage that specifically was formed to address youth violence and gang violence in Anchorage. Just wanted to, if I may, Chair, address the committee, reference Senate Bill 89, and state my support for it. It is a proven tool in many states to not only monitor people who have been convicted of violent crimes while they're out on probation or parole, but also it is a way with younger people in this, many of these crimes are committed by older youth in the 17 to 21, 22 year age range. Probation parole officers are able to not only catch them doing something that they shouldn't be doing, but also provide positive reinforcement when their behavioral patterns are in compliance. And that's a time in their life when they are amenable to positive reinforcement when behavior patterns do change. This is one more tool to do that, and as prior testimony stated, it is more difficult to be received inside the structure of a gang unit when you are being monitored and tracked. It is a good tool. It has been implemented down here in Kenai. We have up to 15 people on the program. It just started here a couple weeks ago, and we're very pleased with the partnership of DOC, keeping the law enforcement community appraised of who is on release right now with these ankle monitors, and so far been very effective. So with that in mind, I think it would be a good tool in Anchorage and around the state, but these are kind of pilot projects we have going on, and I think in about another 12 months we'll have a lot of good data to show the effort of tracking and holding people accountable who have been committed to violent gang-related crimes.
Thank you, Mr. Kopp. Senator Dyson has a question for you.
Yeah, Chief Kopp, this is Dyson. Class of violent crimes have you been putting bracelets on there in your area?
In the past, this is This is only 2 weeks old, so let me say that. And the offenders so far have been lower level violent crimes. I would say nothing more than an assault four and other crimes that the court has determined are of such a nature that they warrant the pilot project program. Right now we have primarily low-risk offenders. They're doing this for a period of several months while the system is gone through a complete evaluation, and there are several technologies employed with it. Right now everything seems to be working as it should as far as the location of offenders, the ability to monitor breath samples remotely, locations remotely, and checkpoints remotely. Once that all checks out, my understanding is then they're going to go ahead and modify the program to allow these higher level offenders that we're talking about now.
If I may continue, am I correct in assuming, Chuck, that these are, in your situation, they're not gang related, and that the higher level ones that you will move to monitoring will be those where there's been violence involved and there's a victim living in the area?
Yes, that's my understanding. It would be, you know, violent sex crimes, violent assaults, and those type of persons that, again, they would have to qualify for the program. So there are a list of qualifiers that between adult probations and the court, they would recognize those people that would be most amenable to this program. But yes, a higher level, a higher class of violent offenders would become eligible. Right now, thankfully, Kenai does not have the numbers of gang-related offenders in our prison. But because we don't, we have taken it upon ourselves to take a very active role with Muni of Anchorage to keep them from coming this way. And part of implementing this ankle monitoring system is to have a system in place that we can pilot and track as well as get behind the Anchorage effort to get their program up. But the short answer to your question is once our technology is worked out and proven, we would raise that to a higher level offenders.
And finally, under your program, are you going to have the offenders paying for it?
I don't know the answer to that question. I don't know if there's a restitution or if they are going to be responsible to help fund this technology tracking or not.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you,
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Thomas, you have a question?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Is there, this question's for anybody, is there any liability that inures to the corrections or the court system or anybody for maybe the failure to properly monitor and some crime takes place, an individual, some negligence, somebody's BlackBerry or something gets dropped in the bathtub and doesn't work or something some evening? Is there any concern like that? Is that anything that ever cropped up in Riverside, California or anywhere like that?
Maybe we'll go to Chuck.
I can speak to that. There's, you know, government entities will always have liability just by virtue of a responsibility to provide for the public safety. If something like that did happen, yes, there could be some liability. But again, this is a proven technology in the lower 48 states. It is relatively new to Alaska, but we're not doing anything cutting edge here. What we're doing is we're finally getting the backbone laid to deploy this technology. And I would not see our liability for this being any more than the ongoing responsibilities we already have to the public.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Kopp, for your testimony. I'd like to go on to Gardner Koop from the Anchorage Police Department.
Hi, this is Captain Kopp from the Anchorage Police Department. And I got kind of notified late on this hearing, so I've just caught just a portion of the ongoing testimony. So I'd like to make a brief statement and answer questions. The Anchorage Police Department is in support of Senate Bill 89. The way I've taken a look at the bill, I've testified a couple times here, and one time on this bill and a couple times on the House version of this bill. And I'm listening to the ongoing conversation between the Attorney General's office and other people. And in my opinion, the bill is very narrow in scope. I don't think we're going to see very many people adjudicated under this bill. And I think that gives us the opportunity, if we were to go ahead with this, to see whether it works or not, since it's fairly narrow in scope. I see the real value, if this works in the future, of expanding it to gang-related crimes as opposed to the way it's constructed now. It's kind of gang-motivated for the benefit or association of a gang. We're in support of the active monitoring. We'd like to catch these individuals that are out in violation, if they're not behaving as they should by their restrictions and their probation, and put them back in jail. We see the value of this is separating the group and hopefully changing their behavior so we don't have to incarcerate them, which is also, as you know, very expensive. And I guess to kind of sum it up, here in Anchorage, of course, we have a significant gang problem at this point. I don't see any inexpensive solution to mitigating the violence here. I think my reading, and I am responsible for coordinating the gang response from the Anchorage Police Department. My reading around the country, the way you get the violence under control to begin with is that you identify the gang leaders, the hardcore members, the ones who are committing most of the violence, and you put them in jail for a long, long time. And of course, and then on the reverse side, in order to interrupt this conveyor belt that's bringing up these hardened thugs that are committing the violent crime, you need to invest in programs to help families at risk. And I guess I'll entertain any questions.
Senator Dyson.
Yeah, thank you, Officer, and certainly appreciate your work. Is it fair for me to interpret your comments that most of the results of this will be revoking probation or getting some accountability on probation violations as opposed to protecting public safety?
Right now, we've seen here in Anchorage people out on bail and probation committing violent crimes, and I think this will help mitigate that. If you can keep them separated from areas and people in which they commit these crimes, I think it'll be a benefit. And that's one of the main benefits we're looking at with this right here, that the people out on probation aren't reoffending.
If I may continue then, so you're sensing that, you're saying that if the perpetrator is approaching one of their former victims, you will be able to intercede?
Right now, we, as the police department, we don't monitor, that's through Department of Corrections, electric monitoring, things like that. But if we were, to get a call from DOC saying this person was violating in a exclusion zone or something like that, and he was a high-risk offender, I'm speaking for the chief at this point, I believe that we would respond if DOC didn't have someone available.
Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony, Officer Cobb. I'd like to move on to Carol Como from the Anchorage School District.
Thank you. This is Carol. I'm also on the anti-gang violence. I'm on the prevention task force, and we have spent quite a bit of time talking about both House Bill 133 and Senate Bill 89 and why we think this would be a very good prevention as well as intervention to prevent gang activities on our high school grounds. We're very supportive of this and would like to be able to do more with these gang offenders who many of them, the wannabes, if you will, are in our schools. And we know that there are adult gang members and people who are out of high school but who try to get onto high school grounds periodically, and I think this would help us considerably monitor that activity.
Could you please identify yourself for the record?
I'm sorry. I'm Carol Como, the superintendent of the Anchorage School District.
Okay, thank you. Okay, thank you for your testimony.
Also, one thing, we have a number of our students on ankle monitors for various reasons now, and we have an excellent relationship with the probation officers and certainly with our school resource officers, police officers in our schools, that communication is quite high. So we think this would be another tool to support the anti-gang activity.
Okay. Thank you. We have any other questions? Senator Elton.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. And kind of a two-part question, perhaps one for the department and one for the sponsor. As the bill has moved through the process, you've added parole also. And I guess the first question is, does that require a title change? And the second question would be of the department on whether or not that affects the fiscal note.
Through the Chair, Senator Allen, we did add the subsection to include parolees. And that was done in the Judiciary Committee at the request of the Department of Law. I believe, and corrections can correct me if I'm incorrect, I believe they calculated did their fiscal note after we had done that, but I'll let corrections speak to that. And just on the title, you are correct. We may need to change that as a special condition of parole. Of probation or parole for offenders. That is a good catch on your part. Thank you.
Through the chair, the department would maintain the indeterminate fiscal note, and it would depend on the numbers as to how much the cost may be to the department. It would still be the 1 to 15, 1 to 20, and 1 to 40, depending on the program.
Okay. Thanks, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In the fiscal note, it alludes to that there are 96 offenders on probation, and 36 of those are under intensive supervision, and in the juvenile system, there are 50 probation individuals with 23 pending probation. Where would the concentration B, would it be on the juvenile system or on the regular individuals under probation?
Through the chair, Mr. Senator Hoffman, our goal is to have this apply to anyone that would fit under the definition, and I guess we can have either legal or corrections talk a little bit more about this, and there is someone here from the Department of Law. It would probably apply more to the people in the adult programs. Although if there were juveniles who had been convicted under this law as adults, I don't see why it would not apply to them.
And of the three different systems that we have here, the active, the passive, and without intense supervision, which one would the department be looking at trying to support?
Through the chair, Senator Hoffman, I believe that depends on the version of the bill that passes. With the word continuous not included, the department would likely go the middle of the road with the passive GPS with intensive supervision. If the word continuous got inserted into this bill or remains in the House bill, that would require the active GPS with intensive supervision.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, with that, we're going to go ahead and set this bill aside. We're going to work on that fiscal note issue, explore some of those other issues, and we'll have it back in the future in front of us.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. With that, we're going to bring up Senate Bill 105, reimbursement for municipal debt. The intent is to go ahead and move this bill, unless there's new information or some circumstances that we haven't been able to forecast here. But with that, Senator Hoffman's here to discuss the bill, and if you could go ahead and do that.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I do have a staff individual. Dr. John Wise will be making the presentation for us today.
Okay.
Thank you. For the record, my name is John Wise. I'm on staff with Senator Hoffman, here today to present Senate Bill 105. This bill originally was introduced or passed by the legislature in 2002 as HB 528 and had a sunset closing date for the harbor projects in HB 28 of July 1, 2007. One of the projects was for Unalaska Small Boat Harbor, and unfortunately there have been a number of delays that have stopped that project from proceeding in a timely manner. Initially they started out doing an environmental assessment and had to change to a more lengthy environmental impact statement that added at least a year to the project. And that state, the assessment is basically just about completed, and they're waiting at this time for full funding from the federal government in order to construct the outer harbors of this project in order that the inner harbors can be completed. And I have a graphic to kind of demonstrate to the committee what this harbor is. The harbor here, you can see in the red, is the inner harbor project that would happen with the successful passing of this bill. The outer harbor in the green areas needs to be completed by the Corps of Engineers, as well as securing financial funding from the federal government. When they started, they thought they could get incremental funding from the federal government. However, the laws changed, and they have to get full funding, so they're waiting, still waiting for that, and hoping to be in next year's appropriation bill, which would allow them to do construction in 2009. Inner Harbor, the red things here, would be the part that would be funded from this bill. The total cost is estimated to be $11 to $12 million, and of that, $5 million in debt would be reimbursed by the state.
Mr. Wise, could you explain a little bit of the amendment that was added in the Transportation Committee, the language on that?
When we first presented the bill to the Transportation Committee, the original wording of the title was used from HB 528, which was passed in 2002. And I talked to legal about the intent of what we were trying to do. Really was just to extend the date from 2007 to 2012 to allow the original projects in HB 528 to be able to continue. And the only one of those projects that has not incurred debt yet is the Unalaska Small Boat Harbor. So therefore the CS was created in order to specify particularly that we were dealing only with a small boat harbor. In the title of the bill, you can't have a place like Unalaska listed, and therefore the wording in CS was changed to make it as tight as possible, so that the funding would only get directed toward a small boat harbor, and in this case, Unalaska's.
Okay. We have questions for Mr. Wise. Is Senator Huggins.
Yeah, Chair, just John, just clarification. I noticed originally there was multiple projects with Solis Valdez and Ohm. You're saying now that those projects would not be covered under the scope of this bill, is that correct? Only on Alaska's small boat harbor?
Well, they, Senator Huggins, through the chair, they would be covered because they're still in the bill. However, the debt has been incurred for those projects. The only one that I, of the small boat harbors that has not been incurred, is on Alaska.
Understand. Okay. Understand. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Other questions? Senator Dyson, you look like you. Okay. I'd like to note that the fiscal note on this particular bill, there's 2-0 fiscal notes. The impact is in previous fiscal notes when the legislation was initially adopted, so this is just an extension. The legislation would have no additional fiscal impacts on the state. And is there anybody here to testify on the bill? Or
the on Alaska City manager Chris Laddick is available in the audience if there are any questions from the committee.
Okay. Seeing no comments, we'll bring it back to the Senator Dyson.
Just going to say that, which I hope is obvious to everyone here, that Dutch Harbor on Alaska is the largest fishing port in North America, maybe the world, on basis of either poundage or the value. And those are very dangerous waters, and the need for a boat harbor there where the vessels are relatively safe is without question. This is one of the largest fishing industry locations. Well, is the largest in Alaska and a significant contributor to that industry. Why I support both the effort for the seawall and this bill.
Okay, thank you. Okay, seeing no other comments, do we have a motion, Senator Hoffman?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that we pass out Senate Bill 105, Transportation, with individual recommendations and accompanying fiscal notes.
Thank you. We have a motion. Do we have objection? Seeing no objection, we'll go ahead and move this bill on with individual recommendations and the attached fiscal notes on to the next committee of referral, which is rules.
Good job, John.
Thank you, Mr. Lyons. Tomorrow morning at 9 a.m., we're going to pick up two bills, Senate Bill 85, extending the state medical board, House Bill 108, dealing with the Board of Marine Pilots. And with that, we'll just take a quick brief at ease. Thank everybody for coming this morning. We'll see you folks at 9 a.m. tomorrow. Meeting adjourned.